You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
I was very thankful for it. It felt like a weird life raft musically and creatively in a time of otherwise great uncertainty and anxiety.
Welcome to Midnight Chats, a podcast of laid-back conversations with leading names in music. In keeping with these informal interviews, each new one is published weekly at midnight. This week's episode is hosted by me, Greg Cochran, from Loud and Quiet magazine. We interrupt this period of downtime for Midnight Chats to bring you something a little bit special, an in-between series episode of the podcast with Aaron Desner. In any ordinary time, I'd be excited about welcoming Aaron onto the podcast, but the multi-instrumentalist, producer, founding member of The National has had, and this is putting it mildly, quite an 18 months. The big headline being that instead of making banana bread like everyone else during quarantine, he made an album with Taylor Swift, Folklore. You probably heard about it. Went on to win the Album of the Year at the 2021 Grammys back in March. I guess that surprised a few people, but that new creative partnership continued throughout 2020 and into this year. Aaron also worked on Folklore's sister album, Evermore, and he has also been involved with Taylor's project to re-record and release her previous albums in order to re-establish the rights. As close followers of his work will know, Aaron likes to keep busy, whether that's curating brilliant festivals, co-running the People platform, or composing the music for an art installation. He does so many things, there's always a reason to speak to him. But on this occasion, excitingly, it's the release of a new Big Red Machine album, the Multi-Dimensional Collective he's formed with Bon Iver's Justin Vernon. The follow-up to their self-titled debut album in 2018 is this new one. It's called How Long Do You Think It's Gonna Last? And is out to buy and stream from Friday the 27th of August. In keeping with the cooperative spirit of the whole project, it features lots of notable guests, including Taylor Swift, Robin Pecknold from Fleet Foxes, Sharon Van Etten, Lisa Hannigan, Ben Howard, Anise Mitchell, and many others. As you're about to hear in the conversation we recorded, it's the songs where Aaron takes lead vocals, not something he does all that often, that I think are amongst the standout moments, particularly the track Brycey. You'll hear me mistakenly call it Bryce in the chat. That's about his twin brother and bandmate in The National. There's also a very moving track called Hutch, which is an ode to his friend and collaborator Scott Hutchison from Frightened Rabbit, who sadly passed away a few years ago. Lovely stuff of him talking about the closeness of his friendship with Justin Vernon as well. Given how disrupted everything has been throughout this year and last, I obviously wanted to find out if he's managed to spend any time in person with The National, which he has. They got back together in the early summer, so he fills us in on all of that. So thanks again to Aaron for recording this, especially as he was away spending some time with his brother and their family in France at the time. For that reason, forgive the odd bit of glitchy Wi-Fi audio. So here we go, a special one-off episode of Midnight Chats. I'm really happy to introduce Aaron Desner. Aaron, welcome to Midnight Chats. It's great to have you on the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm well, thank you. I'm in France near the Spanish border.
Are you?
Just waking up here. Yeah. It's the Basque coast, and my brother lives here. And we came down and just kind of finally moving around a little bit more now that we can. So it's nice, yeah. Near San Sebastian, Spain, actually.
Are you having a short break? Are you getting to work on something? What's kind of taking you there at the moment?
It's really just like I haven't seen family in a year and a half. So my sister had her 25th wedding anniversary and I came over. She lives in Italy and my brother lives in France. So I've just been like visiting them, but I'm still doing, I always work on some things. I have my laptop and I can still work. So it's sort of like never ending music stuff, but I'm good.
Do you find it hard like switching off? I mean, it feels like you're always working on such a range of projects at all times. I mean, obviously some of that involves like booking in to be in with various people like together in the studio, but a lot of the time, imagine it's just kind of like tinkering away, like remote working. Are you good at kind of like being like, nope, going to turn off the laptop for this week because it's a bit of family time? Or are you there sort of getting up super early in the morning just to get a little bit of work done?
It's weird. Like, I think I'm good at not, I'm lazy with certain things. Like it takes a lot for me to open the laptop and launch Pro Tools and actually start working on something, but I always play instruments. So like that part never really turns off. Wherever I am, there's usually like, there's a piano here and there's guitars and stuff. So I pick those up. And that's actually when, oftentimes that's when the most interesting things happen, is when you're not really intending to work, but you just accidentally stumble onto something, or when you're playing music and you don't know what it is, or you don't know what it's for, that's when the interesting things happen, at least for me. Because like if I sit down and I'm being more intentional, like trying to write something, usually it comes out a little bit like contrived or sort of, I don't know, something that like less inspired than if you just sort of like are doing it in a more abstract way and then you stumble into some place that's interesting. So that's kind of like work. I never really stop playing music, but I do stop like editing and playing with the computer, basically.
Looking forward to chatting to you in a sec about all of the the Big Red Machine record that's coming out very soon. But there are always reasons to feel sort of nostalgic, and there are certain hooks and anniversaries and things like that, especially with all the work that you've done over the years. But I noticed that this year is 20 years since you started Brassland. So this is the record label that you set up to release music from the National originally, I suppose, and then it's gone on. You've obviously worked with so many like tremendous artists over those kind of decades. But I wondered if you had any sort of reflections on starting that label and what it's gone on to do, and the artists that it's sort of, you know, meant that you've gone on to work with, and what that's been like.
Thank you for asking about Brassland. I mean, we started it with our friend Alec Hanley Bemis, who's really like been the leader of it, and he was someone who went to college with my brother, and he was a music journalist and like just a really smart person and a good friend. And he was also really cynical, kind of early. I remember when he first met my brother, he said my brother was playing the guitar on the college campus where they went, like sitting outside playing the guitar, and Alec went up to him and introduced himself and then asked if Bryce was in a band, and Bryce was like, yeah. And like Alec was like, well, I probably won't like your band, just say that. Which I don't know, you know, like we always joked about that because he was like, you know, he's kind of cynical, but extremely knowledgeable. And we joked that we've always put out music that no one else would put out or something. Alec made a pretty good career of that, but that's not actually entirely true. I think we just tried to put out records that felt like Brassland would be the best home, and that maybe didn't make sense in other places. But yeah, it started with the National and Clogs, but then we had so many interesting artists, Spook and Gaze and This Is the Kit and people like Eric Friedlander, and there were a lot of awesome records that we put out. But over time, like, it's really been Alec's work, and Bryce and I have gone on to do lots of other things, but we kind of still stay involved as much as we can.
And I mean, kind of linked to that, obviously, the last few years, well, about 5 years ago now, I think it was, you launched People, which is like a platform for like a record label, a platform, a place where people can kind of come together as a community. Obviously, you've done sort of festivals and live events with that as well, like the People Festival we did in Berlin. And I wondered how, through the sort of past 18 months, how you've seen that community evolve, because obviously, as we've all had to, face to face, haven't spent a lot of time physically with other people, it feels like basically a lot of that has been built on the chemistry that comes out of people being together a lot of the time physically. So I just wondered how you've seen that kind of evolve the past 18 months, what with everything that's been going on.
People, which actually we have to spell it with letters and numbers upside down, because People magazine apparently owns the use of the word people, which is hilarious. Because it couldn't be a more like every man and woman term than people. But anyways, we called it People, and then we got a cease and desist from the people that own People. But I think initially it started as an idea kind of coming out of, I think, a feeling that collaboration between artists and giving people a chance to make new music is vital to growing and to pushing forward what you're doing and being able to, like, not, I think with so many artists, they get stuck, musicians get stuck kind of in this cycle of making records and then promoting them, and the sort of that bottleneck of make a record and then promote it, wait for it to come out, then promote it and tour, and then make another one. And it kind of like, and you play the same songs over and over on tour. This has kind of been our experience with The National also. And I've always enjoyed having the opportunity to do something different, whether it's collaborate with people I've never met before, or get up on stage and be more spontaneous, or play, have to take the risk of like not totally knowing what you're doing, or just reacting in real time to other musicians. And it's a simple idea, but actually there aren't a lot of actual opportunities for people to do that, or they can be few and far between, because most of the music industry is structured around selling tickets to your show where people are going to hear the songs that they already know, mm-hmm. So we found, my brother started a festival in our hometown in Cincinnati like 16 or 17 years ago, Cincinnati, Ohio. The festival was called Music Now. And the whole idea was to commission artists to make new music for it and then perform it. And it was more akin to New Music World or the classical music world, but pulling in people from all different, kind of multidisciplinary artists, but also, like people from the indie rock world or from wherever, and giving them a chance to just write new music and perform it. There was so much vitality in that, and so many great seeds were planted at Music Now that then we kind of kept trying to look for ways to do that. And that's when Justin Vernon and I started the Eau Claire Festival in his hometown, which was similar, maybe just on a bigger scale because it was outside, but also like we tried to get people to come do something they hadn't done before, or to work with people they'd always wanted to, but they didn't have the chance. Anyways, and then that migrated into working with the Michelbergers in Berlin, Tom and Nadine, and we started the People Festival there with them. And we had two, and you kind of did a lot of things at the hotel because they kind of provided this sort of oasis where you could come live and stay at the hotel and work on new music with people. And there was all kinds of collaboration that happened there. And then they're at the Funk House, the old radio campus in Berlin. There we gathered for the first time, there were 100 musicians for a week, and then there were performances. And the second time we had another one, and there were 200 musicians. It's kind of insane how much music was made and how many seeds were planted and sort of projects came out of that. Really, then we started to realize that there's a need to like also have a platform for releasing that music and sharing it with people. And so we tried to start a streaming platform, which sort of worked, but it was also like going to be a huge amount of effort to build it and maintain it, and wasn't really what we set out to do. So then we started another record label, which exists now. And that's where like Big Red Machine is coming out on that. And a lot of other music, as much music as we can possibly release. But I think it's been hard not to be able to. Mary Hickson is this amazing organizer and producer who lives in Ireland. And she was the one really organizing the residencies. And so as when COVID came, all these plans kind of got suspended or scrapped, but now it's slowly starting to come back. But in the meantime, I feel like people have still been able to really work remotely with each other. And it's kind of been amazing how people have adapted. And like, I mean, it's obviously made so much music in during the quarantine and during this kind of like period where no one can travel. But yeah, so people, it's just a loose idea, but it's the basic idea. And you see it in the Big Red Machine record is collaboration and trying to create this sort of these community sense of community and music and really like open exchange of ideas. And I find myself really growing a lot when I do that, as opposed to like just making stuff by myself or being just staying in the national and doing my thing, you know, like that can start to be confining or kind of you can easily stagnate, I think.
You mentioned Mary Hickson there. I came to the Sounds from a Safe Harbor Festival in Cork in Ireland in 2017, which one of the most exciting weekends of music I've ever been to, I think, because not just of the fact that, you know, obviously that you were there with the National and Bon Iver was there playing and loads of fantastic artists were there, but it was full of sort of what felt like really spontaneous moments of music and just completely different. And for me, I'm sure this was the purpose, but it kind of reinvented what I thought a music festival could be, really. Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm pleased to hear that there's going to be you're keen to get back and do more of that stuff again, like in the future as well.
Yeah, Mary's she's always working on a lot of ideas, and there's a bunch of things starting to be planned right now. But I think it's a simple idea to sort of give people time and space to make something new, but it doesn't happen enough, you know. I think so. A lot of it's just something that. And Mary's particularly good at that and just gives so much encouragement and emphasizing process kind of over the product. And that's also, you know, Tom and Nadine Michelberger still are hosting a lot of great things in Berlin also. And it's just that I think it's been a really positive movement.
You mentioned that sort of the collaborative spirit is a strong core element of Big Red Machine. I mean, obviously, right at the heart of it is yourself and Justin. Away from the obvious chemistry that you have in terms of creativity, writing music together, how do you and Justin kind of complement each other just as being mates, as friends? Like, how does it work together? Like, why do you get on so well?
It's a good question. I mean, we're from similar places in a way, or at least we're both Midwestern. He's from a small Wisconsin town. Western Wisconsin. I'm obviously from Ohio, which is more, it feels like more East Coast in a way or something, like a little bit, people aren't quite as nice or something as they are in Wisconsin. But I think he's not, one thing I would say is like, he's not naturally someone who would seek the spotlight, and neither am I. He's basically just like someone who is obviously so gifted musically and really like, it just is in his soul. And I grew up in a similar way where it's like, I've just been playing music since I was a kid and it's just like my natural state, but I don't kind of love a lot of the trappings of it or something, or like having to cultivate the spotlight or seek it or something. And so like, I think we have really enjoyed just making music for the sake of making it, not really knowing what it is, almost like, somehow when we're together, there is this feeling a little bit, it's almost childlike, like the wonder of like, yeah, let's just make some stuff, or let's start to get some people together, do something, almost like you're just whatever, doing acid with your friends and making noise, is getting back in touch with the feeling of like why you make music in the first place. Forget the acid. I just mean like, you know, I mean, literally some of the Big Red Machines happen like that, but I think it's like, it just feels very easy. It's like our friendship has grown strong over a very long period of time because it's been 13 or 14 years. Yeah. But a lot of it has revolved around just like tinkering with music. I guess the truth is a lot of over time, because like I've been on tour for so long, like the National toured for over 20 years. So eventually like a lot of your friendships are kind of connected to what you do. Cause I haven't been home a whole lot to make other friends or something, you know what I mean? So it's like a lot of the people, you know, are people that are kind of like in the same, doing similar things or out there, because you just end up seeing each other a lot.
As you already mentioned, there's a whole load of other stuff that goes along with, you know, making the music that you make. How do you support each other? Like, what are you kind of, you know, do you lift each other up through the times when it's not as easy? Do you know when it's time to just like crack open a beer and just be there for each other, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's maybe another aspect of our friendship, is that we both have had our struggles with, you know, ups and downs, or kind of sometimes anxiety or depression. And he's been very helpful to me and caring, and vice versa, and kind of also not having big expectations with a lot of friends. I struggled when I was a kid with, as a teenager, I had fairly serious depression, and I kind of always am scared of it a little bit, or it's like always like just somewhere out there. So I do things to take care of it. And I relate to other people that have that also, and can be helpful, I think, because like I'm sympathetic to it, or empathetic. And he's the same way. But so it's like, and music is definitely therapeutic, or it's important in this emotional way to him, and in the same way it is to me, or so I think. And so, or at least, you know, I think maybe Big Red Machine, a lot of the music is like, has this circular, almost meditative, like you can feel me like rocking myself, soothing myself. And I think there's something that like strikes a real chord with him with that also. But yeah, I don't know. We definitely have fun. You know, it's fun. Like when we get together, it just feels very good, comfortable. It's never been an effort.
I mean, having followed your work with different projects that you've done, like with this Big Red Machine album specifically, it feels quite, certainly on the tracks where you kind of like take lead vocals, very like very personal. I feel like as a listener, I kind of learn a lot about you. To pick out a couple of songs that I wanted to mention, obviously there's a track on there, Bryce. So presumably, yeah, that's you know, really, it's a beautiful song, kind of obviously kind of about your brother. And I wondered like what Bryce's reaction was when you performed that or played it to him for the first time, because it's to my ears, you absolutely tell me if I'm wrong, but it's this kind of like, it's almost a sort of tribute to your connection and his support for you and your life together, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like a love letter to him, thanking him for not letting me fall between the cracks sometimes, or sort of go in. Maybe if I've ever been in a tailspin, which I have, he's usually the one who like grabs me and pulls me out of it. I mean, he, literally, that's what he's done. And I think, and I'm thankful for that, because not everyone has that person in their life. And so when you have a twin, and like for whatever reason, I was the twin that ended up more with that, like, whatever, potentially that brain that sometimes goes dark. And it's weird because it's not really, it's almost just like abstract. It doesn't have to do with anything. It's just like a chemical thing that can happen sometimes. But having a twin brother who was like so caring and unwilling to like let me fall, basically, he just kind of like literally did my homework, and he wrote my papers almost for a whole year when we were seniors in high school. And he like, you know, would shake me awake, make me get in the shower and stuff like that, just to kind of like keep me from just wallow or just turning into this sort of whatever I was turning into. And I think that's what that song is about. Also just looking back at your childhood and searching for remedies, and all, and just like thinking about how in a time before you've made mistakes, or the kind of uncertainty and anxiety and that comes with adulthood. You know, I think that's what this record is about, is like that, partly it's like searching for remedies and maybe being nostalgic about a time before you've lost people or hurt people or seen your family disintegrate or things like that. And kind of looking for like, I don't know, looking for meaning, or how do you get back to something that's a more joyful, innocent, beautiful sort of innocence of childhood in that song. I think when I wrote that song, it definitely felt like, okay, the record might be about this or something. And then there are other songs which came after, and I think other people heard Brycey and felt connected to it also, and wrote influence the words that they are writing, because this record does, because there are so many different singers and writers in it, but it does, it weirdly feels like related, like different characters in the same book or something.
And sort of continuing on that personal note of like close relationships, there's a song called Hutch on there, which is a really moving way to remember your friend Scott Hutchinson from Frightened Rabbit. That song feels like it's like you're having a conversation with him, if you know what I mean. You still obviously think about Scott a lot, and you wanted to kind of write something about him and your friendship.
That music, I wrote the music not kind of around the time that, you know, like when, not long after he had passed. And so it has this, you know, obviously it's very melancholic, but there's something that's almost like spiritual. It's almost gothic spiritual or something, the feeling in the music. And I played it for Justin, and he wrote the vocal melodies, kind of sang them in just very spontaneously. And it sort of sat like that for a while. The sketch was called Hutch, so I knew it was about Scott. And because when he had, it's like you have friends that you know struggle sometimes with depression or even suicidal thoughts, but you never think, you know, it's like one thing to have those thoughts and another to act on them. But the difference between that kind of tragic decision is such a thin line. It could be like, it could go either way at any point, kind of, you know. And I think that's what the song is a little bit about, just like, how did it get that bad? And, you know, what if I could have been more involved or tried to, you know, check in on you more, even though I wasn't, you know, I wasn't in his daily life. We had toured a lot together, and I had produced their last album, but I felt very like, yeah, I felt close to him, and I had a lot of love for him. And he actually was very encouraging to me in a lot of ways. Like, he was actually one of the people who really pushed me to sing. I kind of thought I should use my voice more. And anyways, it was just a total, when he went missing and then obviously was found, it was really hard period, because I had one of my best friends growing up also passed away that way, like 10 years prior. It was very similar situation where like you kind of wake up one day and they're gone, you know, and you're like, whoa, like, and it, then you search for answers, but you don't find any. So that's what that song is about. And it's very dark, but it was cathartic to write it. So then Justin and I wrote the words together. And when we were right before the pandemic, and Justin had never met Scott, but he felt very like, he could very much relate to this feeling and the fear of losing friends and even like contemplating those thoughts yourself. And, but I guess that is part of this record, is just shining a light on these things that, you know, many more people have these thoughts than people realize. And it's so important to ask for help. And it's such a simple thing, but it's like people do fall. It's kind of like, we call it flu of the mind. Like if you have the flu, or if you break your leg, or if you cut your hand, you get medical attention. But a lot of people don't realize that your mind is just as, if not more, important to take care of, you know. So.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global.
When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
There's, I mean, obviously there's an abundant amount of kind of collaborators on this album. Robin Pecknold is there from Fleet Foxes. Has that been a kind of long time ambition to work together with Robin?
I mean, I've always been a fan. I think he's so incredible, gifted, you know, obviously an incredible voice and songwriter, and he's made incredible records. And so I have a huge amount of respect for him. And yeah, I did feel that I guess it's almost like sometimes I think of Big Red Machine as like the band or some sort of like the Grateful Dead or some like a band that can open and kind of encompass a lot of voices and a lot of people and a lot of different kinds of songwriting. And maybe like this idea of improvisation and experimentation that seems kind of core to it really is welcoming, I think, to certain other musicians. And I did think like, what if Justin and Robin were on the same song, wouldn't that be like special? Because they're two of these incredibly beautiful voices of our generation. And but it really made sense when I think Robin really clicked with the music. I had written the music and Justin had written the chorus to that song, Phoenix. And then Robin heard it. And I think it just clicked with him, this dialogue with Justin, because they'd had this conversation in Phoenix backstage years ago. Yeah, it just kind of like came together. And then Robin added a lot of production with himself and then also with his friends, the Westerlies, this incredible brass band. And I don't know. Yeah, it's just an incredibly warm, vibrant song that it's like the kind of thing you can't really plan for, you know, you can't make it. It just happened. We lucked into it, I guess. So, and like there's so many kind of inspired performances in that song. JT Bates, the drummer, who is a huge part of Big Red Machine, but he's just, it's like he's born to play that song, kind of like the way he, you know, it's like a straightforward song, I guess, musically, but he just gives it such vibrancy.
Taylor Swift appears on a couple of the songs on the Big Red Machine album, and obviously you worked on her Folklore and Evermore projects last year and have done other work with her as well. I wondered how that came about. Was that sort of a reciprocal thing whilst you were working together on other material, and how did that kind of come to be?
Honestly, it wasn't incredibly organic, where I think obviously Taylor had approached me to collaborate remotely, which led to sharing a lot of ideas back and forth, and Folklore happened, and then we just kept going, and Evermore happened. But along the way, I had played for her a lot of new Big Red Machine songs and ideas, and she loved the first record, and Ben Justin was obviously collaborating on Folklore and Evermore, and at some point it just felt like we were all just like part of the band or something. Like it was very natural, you know, writing stuff. And I think she loved the song Birch, so she actually sang that first before writing Renegade. That was towards the end of when we were working on Folklore that she recorded her vocals for Birch. And then it was always in the air that she thought that she would, you know, that she would want to write more for Big Red Machine. And it just felt like it was another spoke in the wheel of stuff that we were working on. Yeah, it wasn't something like we discussed very much in like a, hey, would you do this kind of way. It was literally just like, we're making stuff and it's fun and it's inspired. And that's kind of very much where she comes from also, almost like, or that was the energy between us, just make music, make songs, and see what it is later in a way. So then when she wrote Renegade, because I had written the music and sent it to her, and then she wrote this she wrote the song and sent it back to me, and she was like, I think this is a Big Red Machine song. And I agreed, and then Justin added his parts, and it just kind of happened. But I think that's again, like, why that project exists, I think, is to try to, like, get in touch with that feeling of spontaneity and just making music for the joy of it. And then, you know, hopefully it's cohesive, but it's not, like, it's more in a way about process than it is about the final thing, even though in this case, luckily the record feels like it has a feeling of a classic record, but it kind of happened in a spontaneous way.
You spoke earlier about the sort of, like, your, like, the trappings that go along with making music sometimes, and the spotlight, and not necessarily feeling like that's your favorite part of doing the job. And I wondered whether, like, when the opportunity did come to work on Folklore and then Evermore, and obviously subsequently, like, huge amount of spotlight's been shown on you. You've got, like, camera crew in the studio with you to make a documentary, and then, you know, congratulations on winning a Grammy, by the way. It's a huge spotlight. Like, I mean, that inevitably comes with working with an artist of like Taylor Swift's notoriety. So did you have to sort of weigh that up in your mind and decide, like, do I want to put myself in the spotlight to work on this kind of project, or did you just know that it was too much of an exciting kind of artistic opportunity to pass up?
I think, well, first of all, because I had really come to love Taylor as an artist, because it's actually our friend Ragnar Kjartansson, this Icelandic visual artist and performance artist, when we were around the time that the National played Sorrow for 6 hours in a row. That was a Ragnar Kjartansson piece, and he's like, he's a crazy Swiftie, like he's really a huge fan. And it was when 1989 came out, and we were in Iceland working with him, my brother and I, and we were like blasting 1989, which is like kind of like absolutely perfect record in a way, you know, pop record. And I think just kind of started to see that what a master of her craft she is, and also just her songwriting, the way there are all these different levels of it and clues, and the way her fans work. And when she approached me to collaborate, I didn't really, you know, maybe it was also just because A, having such respect for her already, but B, it was a time when the world had slowed down and the pandemic was in full. It was April, end of April last year. And all I'd been doing was writing music by myself and working on it and kind of feeling very inspired musically. So it was like perfect timing when she came, and I just shared, she asked if what I had, and I just was like, well, here. And I happened to just have this giant folder of stuff that just really clicked, I think, that she just really clicked with, and very quickly, you know, Cardigan, she sent back within hours of first making contact. And so that just, and it was just this weird, it felt like the train just left the station and didn't stop for a long time, or hasn't stopped me, but like, I think I was very thankful for it. It felt like a weird life raft or something musically and creatively in a time of otherwise great uncertainty and anxiety. And like, the, you know, live music had stopped and, you know, but we just ended up in this weird cocoon writing stuff remotely. So no, I didn't, and that's another thing about her. She doesn't make you feel, I never felt that I was out of my league or something, you know. She's just not like that. She makes you feel appreciated and confident, and kind of, she's grateful and she's humble and grounded, and she just seems like hardworking, incredibly talented artist, you know. But there's no, I've never had the feeling of like feeling that I'm working with a giant star, even though she is, obviously. But it's like, it feels very like, much like working with your good friend who just happens to be crazy talented, but they're not making you feel the pressure, you know what I mean? And even when the record came out, we were on the phone when Folklore came out, we were chatting on the phone like at midnight when it came out. It was just like fun. It was like our, you know, there was no anxiety. It just felt like very, I don't know, maybe I got lucky that I never really thought too much about it, like what it would mean or, you know, on what scale it was. But I guess that's a good thing.
There's Coney Island, which is one of my favorite tracks on Evermore, which is bringing together obviously your work with with Taylor, but also the national. And it's like kind of two of your important worlds kind of merging and colliding on one song. And I know that you described it as a almost like a sort of full circle moment. And I wondered if you wouldn't mind talking to me a little bit about why that felt like a full circle moment to you.
Yeah, well, Coney Island is actually something that my brother Bryce started the music for, and he had worked a lot on Folklore and also on Evermore, and obviously we do so much together, and then I had sort of developed it, and Taylor wrote Coney Island with Joe, actually, and Joe Alwyn, and they then felt that it was like, because it felt very much, maybe of all the songs we made, that one felt the most related to the national or something musically, maybe, or sort of like in the character, I think, in her mind of the song, she just was hearing Matt. And so we asked Matt if he would sing, and he was totally up for it. And then Brian and Scott joined us, and it just felt like, because I feel like everything that all the songs I wrote with the band and all the work I've done with Matt and everyone is what prepared me to do everything I do now. Whether it's all the work with the Taylor and I have done, or Big Red Machine stuff. It's like, I kind of went to this 20 plus year school of like making songs and records, uncompromising sort of records with your buddies. You know what I mean? You just have to figure it out. Like, how do you make great recordings? How do you write songs? How do you structure these ideas? Because it's in a way, the way we work has always been kind of remote, because we hardly ever sit in the same room and like hash things out. It's usually like I make sketches and Matt writes the sketches, and then the band develops it. Anyway, so it did feel like full circle, that song. I mean, it's very much a Taylor Swift song, but then the national's presence in it, you can feel, you know, and Matt's voice and Brian's drumming and Bryce's work and Scott. And so it felt good to connect those dots, for sure.
When was the last time you were in a room together with the rest of the band with the national? Because obviously opportunities have probably been few and far between the last 18 months, but have you managed to get back together, see each other?
Yeah, we were together in April, and it was really nice for the first time, or maybe it was May, I can't remember, but like for the first time in almost a year and a half. Because the last week we walked off stage in mid-December in Lisbon, and it was one of the best national shows I think we've ever played. It was in this Coliseum or something in Lisbon, and you just remember there, I think it was like 15,000 people, and they were just, in Portugal, it's kind of one of the best audiences in the world. And it just, I remember thinking to myself that this is the last national show I'll be glad or happy that like to go out in this way. I don't know why I thought that, because I don't know, it's not like I'm that fatalistic, but, and we didn't know about the pandemic at that time. It was December 2019, but then it turns out that was the last national show. Maybe not, I mean, not ever, we'll play again, but for a long time, it's been the first time that we haven't had a break in 20 years of, you know, that of this long. So it was nice to get together in April, and we just played a lot of music and shared a lot of ideas, but it's still going to be a while before it'll be till next year, I think, that before we actually release anything or tour, you know. But hopefully it's hard. It feels like we might not ever get back to it, because it's, you know, who knows? It's like the world is so unstable, and the variant and all that, you know, it's like, it definitely feels like getting back to that moment where you step on stage just still feels distant, even though I know people are doing it now, but anyways, but yeah, so I have seen them, and we're in touch, and we have a lot of ideas. But I think it's going to be really exciting when we make something new, because everybody's going to have a lot of energy, you know.
Yeah, and it's like kind of been in sort of unplanned but enforced break. But maybe that's nice. Maybe that breathing room creates something new. You never know.
Definitely, it's like bands are weird social experiments, and you know, giving it a little space sometimes is a good idea. But I kind of hope we can like get back in touch with the weird power of it, you know, the joy of it, and this weird like engine. When that engine is going, when it's really going, it can be very powerful. And I think finding that, and we did, you know, like you feel it when we like there were moments when you could feel it clicking, and that's exciting.
To find previous episodes of Midnight Chats, simply search your podcast app. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to keep up, as they're published every week at midnight. For more information on the music magazine that makes this series, visit loudandquiet.com.
Anyway, good night.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Are you looking to build this year? If so, there is no better time than right now to start planning and to get your spot on the construction schedule. If you need a garage, a stall barn, a storage for vehicles, RV, boat, collectibles, or even a shop for your farm, hobbies, or car restoration projects, visit MortonBuildings.com and start your construction process. With superior materials, craftsmanship, best-in-class warranty, Morton Buildings are made to last for generations. At Morton, the difference is in the details. From their cutting-edge innovations to their craftsmen in the field, they are dedicated to surpassing expectations. Their legacy of excellence spans more than 120 years, and Morton Buildings is 100% employee-owned with more than 250,000 satisfied customers. That means they're the industry leader you can trust. When you choose Morton, you'll experience quality at every step of the building process, starting before the walls even go up. Visit MortonBuildings.com to get started today.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.